Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Every Wednesday on the Low Blows Network, the Low Blows team are at hand to break down, analyze, and make fun of all things pro wrestling. Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash.
I think the only reasonable thing we can do now is turn John Cena heel.
Selfie with me fucking dog.
Banned from Nigeria. I will be talking to the government tomorrow morning.
YouTube star Corporate King.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Ross has four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bonesaw rips off his shirt, yeah? And it says, Chuck your law. Big dirty toy for him.
And the queen of Irish wrestling, Katie Harvey.
I want one to sign. Just CM
I'm
Punk.
I'm so embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bravo!
Congratulations to Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez as the ex-lovers confirmed via an Instagram post for J-Lo's birthday during the week that they have reunited and have been pictured together since all week. Adorable stuff all together. But as we get kicked off here on another edition of the Low Blows, Rick Nash, Corporate King, Katie Harvey in the house as always. Guys, I want to know couples in wrestling that you'd like to see get back together. Katie, we'll start with you.
I'm picking a couple that I did not appreciate enough when they were together on screen, and that is Lita and Kane, because that sadly got cut short by, you know, the real life shenanigans of Matt Hardy, Edge and Lita, and I just feel like we didn't get enough of the Kane Lita storyline. We got that weird pseudo, like, the storyline started with her and Kane, and then Matt Hardy and Edge kind of interrupted, and then it flipped to real life. But, like, really, the Kane stuff was really entertaining. Like, I loved it. So, like, I would fully welcome them both back just to do a reality show of a marriage.
Okay, interesting. Is Chuck Palumbo, it's a sensitive question, I know, but, like, you never know what wrestlers... Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Chuck, I want to see Vinny and Chuck back together.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see Chuck Palumbo. I just want to check in on Chuck Palumbo.
Why do you think he was dead?
Because wrestlers, like, a lot of, like, wrestlers from that, like,
you know,
era.
It's actually really weird. Like, what do you mention Chuck Palumbo? I'd say a few months ago, I was on his YouTube channel, and his YouTube channel, I was watching him, like, for a good, like, half an hour. It's not doing anything. He just basically, like, restores, like, places and, like, things, you know what I mean? Like, just he's just living his best life now. Like, I'm yes.
He's 50. Sorry, I had to Google this to confirm he was, in fact, still alive.
What, Chuck Palumbo? He seems happy. Okay, so maybe maybe it's best if they don't get back together.
No, but I love it, because normally, like, you know what I mean? That's the thing about wrestling. Like, so many, like, it's a sad end for a lot of people. So whenever I hear of, like, someone that you forgot about, like Chuck Palumbo, and he's actually having a crack, I'm like, oh,
yeah. He actually hosts a show called Lords of the Car Hordes, which I think is my favourite show title that I've ever heard. That is so satisfying to say.
Lords of the Car Hordes. There you go. Check it out on Chuck Palumbo TV. I don't know. We'll see if we can get it for the Low Blows Network. Corporate King, couples in wrestling you want to see get back together.
I'm going to go with a couple of besties. I'm going to go with the Hurt Business. Again, like we talk about... Talk about how, like, WWE will split tag teams, they'll split, you know, Heavy Machinery, and look what happened to Tucker, they'll split the Iconics, and look what happened to Peyton and Billy, you know what I mean? They split all these tag teams and factions, and it's always for the worse, like, nothing ever comes of it. And I know you can talk about WWE without bringing in AEW, but I just feel that, like, if you look at AEW in this instance, where they've got a very heavy emphasis on factions, it elevates everyone involved in the factions. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, look, like, nobody gets left behind or forgotten about completely. Everyone's there for one purpose or another. Whereas, you look at Shelton and Cedric now, as cool as it was that Lashley on Raw turned around this week and was like, I'll take them both on myself right now and then battered them both. It was cool, right? I'll admit that. But, like, someone like Cedric, he's too talented for that sort of shit. At the same time, like, you know what I mean? As cool as it was, I did like it. But I'd love to see Cedric doing more shit than just, like, you know, getting battered on Main Event by Ricochet and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So I'd like to see the Hurt Business get brought back.
Okay, there we go. We never thought we'd see Benifer get back together. So the hope is real, guys. It could all happen. Although Chumbalumbo, you know, you keep living your best life. So that's made my day. The Chumbalumbo lived happily.
He's doing well in life.
He lived happily ever after. Like, he got the Palumbo ending that he wanted. Guys, it was a quieter week in professional wrestling this week, as things kind of settled down following the insanity of last weekend, but there was still a Tokyo Dome show and a new champion crowned in a major indie, so we'll be discussing it all over the next hour or so. But we're going to get kicked off, as we always do, by covering the news from the week, because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for
Queen versus King.
Queen versus Keen, because my two co-hosts are good friends, but they are even better enemies. So what we do every week to discuss the wrestling news stories is we put the top 5 stories, we put 30 seconds on the clock, and we award points for punditries. I'm going to ask my co-hosts to give their lightning hot takes on the biggest stories and give them points for doing so. We've been keeping score as the year has gone on. It's been up and down. Keen had a big lead for a while. Katie came back, had a bit of a streak, and she went into a big lead. And Keen's after bringing it back tied at 12 apiece, so it is all to play for. We are looking for someone to assert their dominance this week. We're going to start with Katie in question one. On top of the CM Punk rumors we discussed last week, it's looking more and more likely that Daniel Bryan may now sign with AEW in the coming months. But what would you rather see? Would you rather see Bryan in AEW? Would you rather see him in Japan and work in local indies like Fight Factory and the likes? Or would you rather see him back in WWE?
Like, I know Fight Factory is the generic answer for me, right? But I want him back on the indies, but I want him exclusively on shows that aren't filmed or seen. And I want him to be King of the Dark Match. And I want to put him on a Fight Factory show before the doors open. So, like, you know how hot those crowds are anyway. Now imagine if Unknown Music hits, and then Daniel Bryan's music hits, and then we put Unknown over. And then can you imagine everyone standing outside the door queuing, but inside there's absolute, like, just ructions going on. And then Daniel Bryan walks out, and nobody knows for sure what happened inside that venue. Like, that's the mystique I want to create with Daniel Bryan on the indies.
A guy with a mask just walks out and people will never know that they've missed the greatest wrestling match that's ever happened, and Daniel Bryan is here. And that's it. He takes his bag and he flies home. And
yeah,
that's it.
That's how you create like a buzz, a grassroots word of mouth about Fight Factory.
But there's no payoff. Like, there's no payoff to this. It's just he goes out the next town and does the same thing. Corporate King, what do you want to see?
Katie, that was a fucking shit idea, right? Because if he moves to Fight Factory from WWE, you know what that means? He's not loyal. That means he's a traitorous piece of shit. He should stay in WWE from now until the end of his career, until the end of his life. He should never leave the arena for any reason. He should hop straight into the trucks with all the equipment and all the staging and all the production, and he should stay there all the way until the next show, and then comes out, wrestles, and goes back into the trucks. Never goes home, never spends time with his family, never even looks at another wrestling company, let alone wrestles for one. 100% Daniel Bryan, you should remain loyal all day, every day.
And if you want more content like that, check out the Corporate Keen YouTube channel. I'm going to give the point to Katie there and give Keen a plug, which is fair. Everyone gets one each. For the Daniel Bryan is a Trainer, very entertaining video you put up just this week, getting huge, huge traction online. Question two, WWE announced that they would, for the first time ever, show SummerSlam in movie theaters in the US. But if you could watch one wrestling pay-per-view in the cinema, what would it be and why?
I think it has to be a Royal... No, I'm actually going to change my answer. I'm going to go AEW All Out 2021, because best case scenario, CM Punk shows up in Chicago. Not only is the show itself loud, but you're surrounded by wrestling fans. They're going to be loud too. It's going to be a mad pop. You get to experience with people. And if he doesn't show up, you're still like more than likely going to get a banging show with a serious card. Possibly, I don't know, Hangman Omega. I don't really know what the next... If that's the next big show for AEW or not, but it's going to be an excellent show. I'm confident it will be, so I'd like to see that in the cinema. And I also don't know what the results are going to be either, so I'll be at the edge of my seat.
Okay, fair enough. Katie, what do you think?
Mine's not a pay-per-view answer, but you know what I'm going to do is the Final Deletion needs to be shown in the cinema, but it needs to be shown Rocky Horror Picture style, where there's crowd interaction, where Matt Hardy is introduced in the match, where there's drones flying around in the cinema, where it's like people are dressed up as Senior Benjamin to come and see the Final Deletion. And like, that's, it has to be an interactive Hardy event. That's what I would go to.
Did you feel yourself losing the point with that? Where I'm not going to answer the question you asked, however. Corporate Keen, point to you. You got me excited about that. Question three. In an appearance on the Pat McAfee Show, Michael Cole spoke about how working with Pat had re-energized him while also calling himself the best of all time at running a wrestling show and directing traffic, as he called it. Though he did note that Jim Ross was the best at showing emotion. Do you agree with that statement? Or where does Michael Cole fit in the pantheon of wrestling commentary greats for you, Katie?
Michael Cole is a Hall of Famer, not just for being a commentator, but also for being a wrestler. I think he was seriously underrated. Undefeated, I still believe, at WrestleMania, which, you know, The Undertaker can't even claim that anymore. So I think he's earned his stripes in all aspects of wrestling, and he might be the GOAT.
Okay. Betting hard on me being a big Michael Cole fan. I don't think I've ever given you any reason to believe. But anyway, we'll see how it works. We'll see how that strategy works out. Corporate Keen.
I think many people associate his voice with a shite product. And I feel as though his delivery oftentimes can become quite... It feels very artificial. It's kind of like he doesn't speak the language of like a wrestling fan. He speaks in WWE. But at the same time, like, you know, I still think he's incredibly talented. I think, like, if you look at how the level that he's been operating at for that many years, you know, I mean, he's WWE's all reliable at the commentary desk, and I respect that quite a lot. I think he's very much up there. I think he's absolutely a future Hall of Famer. Maybe for his wrestling, but I'd say for his commentary. And I think he's up there, but he's got nothing on Mike Tenay and Don West.
Okay, fair enough. Corbigan, very logical and good answer, whereas Katie obviously made a huge bet that I'm a big Michael Cole fan and would go along with him being called the GOAT. You were correct in that instance, point to Katie, so well done, congratulations. Question four. The return of Velveteen Dream was last week announced on Twitter. It lasted all of 2 hours before New Jersey-based SWF had to pull him from the show due to unsurprising fan backlash. Do you think this is the end for Dream now in professional wrestling?
Unfortunately, no, not at all. I think the vast majority of wrestling promotions don't give a shit about allegations. The vast majority of fans don't give a shit about allegations. In all the promotions I watch, I can name at least one or two wrestlers who have allegations against them. Even in like the G1, there was somebody leaked there a few days ago that's got allegations against them and that. Like, there's no avoid. Like, it's everywhere. Nobody really cares. So I think if he really wants to be a wrestler, I think unfortunately there will be somewhere that he can do it. I don't know where, but I'd say somewhere.
Okay, Katie, what do you think?
No, it's not the end, because he is gonna join that elite group of wrestlers, right? Every country has it. They have that small group of wrestlers when a promotion springs up that's brand new. These, like, a radar goes off, and this tiny, tiny subsection of wrestlers hear this radar and then somehow get into the DMs and get booked before, like, the promotion goes public. And I know when I'm saying this, you are all thinking of certain particular wrestlers.
Yeah, how did you say that?
Because it happens everywhere, and he's going to join that subsection of, like, you know, I we need a term for it, but you know what I mean? The
Danny Deans.
I was going to say in the backdoor wrestlers, but I think that's a very different thing.
I just got on my. Yeah, I felt like, Katie, with that answer, you saw into my soul, so point to Katie, and that actually is the week as well, but we will get to question five anyway. Beth Phoenix has revealed that she is officially medically cleared to return to the ring and open to having a retirement match. But what current day star would you like to see her face in her one more match?
Well, look, usually I would say myself in situations like this, but I'm going to pull a Corporate Keen, and he usually puts me in these type of situations, so I'm putting him in this match now against Beth Phoenix. That is what I want to see happen. I want to see the two of them square up. I want to see him get glam slammed, and numerous times, over and over again, repeatedly, to be honest. And that is how I want Beth Phoenix to go out on top.
Okay, amazing stuff. I really like it. Corporate Keen, what do you like to see? Did she just ruin your answer?
No, I was actually going to say Angel Garza, just because he's never on TV. I think he's really good in the ring, very charismatic. I think retiring a legend will give him a reason to be on TV and featured more often. And like Katie, I'm not picking Katie versus Beth Phoenix. That's not a match I want to see. I've got to go with Angel Garza.
Amazing burn at the end. Amazing.
Oh, I should get the weed for that.
Oh, Oh, you would have, if it was coming down tonight, you would have. You got the point. That was phenomenal, Fern. And I was like, Katie's got it. She's got this point. And then it's like, boom, right in at the end with the good shot. Amazing stuff. That may be the best thing of the week. That may be it, guys, right there. Fantastic stuff. But we've made a list anyway, so we're going to talk about the in-ring stuff, the good and the bad from the week, starting with the bad, because it's at four.
Say something stupid.
Say something stupid. Worst moments of the week. In the number five, a really small one, and this is nitpicky a lot. It's technically from AEW, but it's more specific, because I want to take a second to talk about Tennille Dashwood. If that is her real name, it is, I checked. The reason I'm doubting that it is, though, is because this is what's annoying me. She has so many different names right now, and she works within the same circles where there's no need to have more than one. In Impact, she goes under her real name, whereas in AEW, she's The Bunny. Now, I have no problem with this normally, but these are two worlds that are very much linked, with the AEW champion and even the owner going back and forth freely between them, acknowledging that they're linked and playing the same character. I wouldn't have an issue even with her playing two different characters like Ricochet did when he wrestled in Lucha Underground, but he was in a mask in that sense. Two Bunny Ears is not a mask. It's the exact same person. Not to mention that neither name is the one that arguably the majority of people know her as, which is Emma, and that's fine. There's nothing she can do to control that. But then also, on top of all these names, when she comes out to the ring, they show her social media tag on top of things. And you know what that is? It's at Ali Wrestling. There's too many. You see four different names. This is ridiculous. Like, are you, like, pick a character, go with it, then brand accordingly. It's ridiculous.
Is this a bit? I can't tell. I genuinely can't tell.
No.
I genuinely can't tell. I'm actually...
Yeah, like...
Like, is this a Jonah Rock, Bronson Reed situation? Or is this like... I genuinely...
Is she not the bunny?
No.
Tennille Dashwood, Emma, the bunny, Ali, Cherry Bomb. Those are two different people.
I did not know that.
I literally went on Wikipedia because I thought I was insane. No, for a minute.
When you said you checked, I was like, oh, he checked their names. Obviously, he doesn't keep knowing. And this is just like.
Did not know that. Okay, well, turns out the mask does work.
I was like, do they even look alike?
No! Well, maybe a tiny bit. I mean.
Who's Tennille Dashwood? Who's Ali?
Ali is the bunny.
Ali is the bunny who used to be, well, Ali in Impact, and then that's it, really. Like, she hasn't really done a huge amount in AEW, but Tennille Dashwood is Emma.
Legitimately got mixed up there, right? Say something stupid, me. Turns out I'm the stupid one. There we go. But still, she's a different name.
You had an essay right now. That fucking college thing. I was like, is he taking, like, what? I actually had no idea.
I actually thought he wasn't saying till I looked at
him. What the case there?
I was turning.
Oh, amazing stuff. Okay, that's on me. That one's on me. Sorry, Tennille and Ali, different people.
You didn't tweet that, did you?
No.
Okay.
I'm not gonna tweet it to
them. No, like when you're doing like your live tweets along with show.
I'm like, this is save this for the show. I'm not gonna check this with anyone.
No, you see tweets at Tennille Dashwood and Ali Wrestling. Why are you the same people?
Not my finest hour. In number four, talk to me if it's a bad.
Chess as well. Sorry.
Okay, MLW,
right. MLW, I remember I loved the Contra unit, yeah? The Contra unit were like, it was Jacob Fatu, he was the muscle, he was the champion, he was the tank behind it. You had Simon Gotch, he was kind of the, I suppose, a bit of a lackey, whatever you want to say. And the leader, the mouthpiece, was Joseph Samael, and they were dangerous, they were monsters. Well, Tennille Dashwood was on there with a mask, and I was very happy. I'm of the belief that if you have a faction, you will never hear me say they have too many members when I'm talking about a faction. I believe factions can have 100 fucking members. If you introduce them all properly and are like, oh, here's this person, this is his role, you know what I mean? He means business. I think you can have like an army as a faction if you want, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not against that at all. But the problem with the Contra unit is they introduce so many like different people, it feels, and like a lot of them are like wearing masks and you don't really know who they are, and the masks are real goofy as well, like a proper like joke shop kind of stuff, you know what I mean? I don't know if anyone ever went to the joke shop in the square, but it's like something you get out of that. And like they just sort of like, they're not, there's no kind of intimidation factor anymore. It feels real cartoony or something, you know what I mean? It feels very kind of like this is done as a joke or something, you know what I mean? And like I couldn't stop laughing. Then one sort of backstage interview before the Battle Riot, which is like MLW's Royal Rumble that was on this past weekend, and like you just see like Joseph Samael at the front and all these goofy masks, and then just Daivari just standing there and it's all like just chilling, like just Daivari, you know what I mean? Like it's so random. It's like this, I don't really understand what this group kind of is anymore. It's like I understand their whole thing was, oh, we're not just us three, we're an army, we have soldiers all around the world. Like, yeah, sounds cool, I get it. But then the soldiers show up and they're just wearing these goofy masks, and it's like in the Royal Rumble they entered two people in the same entry slot as, and they were just like, what was it, like the guards of Contra or a hand of Contra? Like I don't know, they had some goofy name, but it was like, it was almost like, and Alex Hammerstone is like this jack babyface that goes in and sort of beats the shit out of him, whatever, but it's like, it's just very like, just something very almost kind of like, when I watch like 1980s wrestling, I don't watch 1980s wrestling because whenever I see it, I'm kind of like, it's so cartoony and over the top that I'm like, no, I mean, I'm sure it was great at the time, but it just looks a bit too goofy like to watch or something, you know what I mean? But like, that's kind of what MLW feels like with the country now. They're very like, it's almost cartoony or something like that. And then Alexander Hammerstone is kind of like the Hulk Hogan, you know, that like dethrones the bad country unit. Like right. When they first showed up, they were like putting people in body bags and setting them on fire and all. Like,
I remember
you
telling
me. Yeah. These guys were killed when they first showed up, you know what I mean? And now it's kind of like, we'll see where it goes there. MLW is debuting. What's fall in American season? Oh, it's autumn, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yeah, right, that's August. That's August, yeah? Yeah. Okay, good. Oh, grand. When they said fall, I was like, bollocks, that's not till fucking Christmas. Like, I'm like, oh, shite. Like, what are you going to do for the next few months then? So August is obviously in a few months, like, or a few weeks. So that's, okay, that's grand.
Next week.
What?
Next week.
Like, it's 2 days away.
Hang on a minute, I'm checking
this. This is none of our finest errors.
No, it's not. 28th of July, well as shit.
Guys, I think I'm coming off the best on this podcast.
This is tragic. Well, no, but that's a good thing. Obviously, that means that MLW is going to be like on, presumably inactive. But I didn't say, they didn't give a date, but I hope it's like the start of August anyway. It, like, but yeah, the country unit, I don't know what they're going to do on Vice. I'd like to see them turn it around, because I did love the country. You remember how much I was into them and their flag and all that, and I was like, I thought they were really cool, but I don't know. Hopefully, we'll see where it goes.
Okay, interesting. This is, this segment is not reflecting well on any of us this week. I'm up next, and I'm doubting myself. Like, I'm doubting everything that I'm saying now. Like, I'm like, is this true? Is left right? Like,
is this Roman Reigns, or has this been Brock Lesnar the whole time? I was just scared
to comment. In a number three, I want to talk about New Japan. I've spoken about Kazuchi Okada and his crappy second finisher, the shit submission that's even acknowledged as a shipped submission, to the point that it wound up Shingo Takagi so much he became the world heavyweight champion because of it. The money clip. Okada obviously is one of the most iconic finishers of the 21st century in the Rainmaker, a move that you'll probably see at least once on every indie show ever since Okada first debuted it in the big stage. But that doesn't exclude slouching elsewhere in his moveset, which he does. For example, now it looks like he's added a third finisher to the mix. And I'm all for wrestlers having multiple finishers. You think of The Undertaker, say, you've got like the Chokeslam, the Tombstone, the Last Ride, even Hell's Gate became a credible finisher. They're all built up and they're all cool moves and believable ways of winning matches. The problem with Okada is his aren't. They're not cool moves, and like, he's also a babyface and there's this and that. Sunday's match with Jeff Cobb was the second time he essentially won a big notable match with a pin so nondescript it doesn't even have a name. It's not even like a small package, which like is an ironic finisher for Phil Boyd. Like, that's a bit like but it basically ends with, like, when you, do you know when you counter a sunset flip, when you just sit on the person and grab their legs? That's his third finisher now. That's Okada's third finisher. Like, he just sits and hooks their legs, and now he's won multiple big matches with it. He beat Chris Jericho in the main event of Dominion, which is their second biggest show of the year, with this move. And this big time AEW wrestler in the main event, of that show. And fine, whatever, you can write it off as a one-off, like when someone gets caught with a roll-up. But last of this match was in the Tokyo Dome. When you consider Okada is a huge deal, even if it wasn't the January 4th show. The fact is that this exact same move, to the point that commentary called it, suggests this is something that Okada is like, alright, now this is a move which wins me matches. Except, no, it really shouldn't be. It's not a good move. It's like, if someone gets caught if someone ever gets caught, that's fine. But like, now all opponents should know to prepare for this. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're thinking of strategies, like, you know, you're like, right, he's probably going to do that pin if I, like, try a sunset flip. So, like, the counter is, and it's not as if it's, like, that complicated either. It's not a difficult pin to get out of. The counter is the exact same as any other pin. Kick out. Just kick out. And that's, like, that's the counter to this move. It's a generic pin, and Okada wins big matches for some reason with it now. I have no idea why. Why is this a finisher now? But, yes, it is. I don't know. Kenny, am I missing something? Is this a really hard pin to get out of or something? Like...
No, it's actually in the 10-pin combo sequence, and it's like the third pin in.
There you go.
Like, it's literally reversed by swinging your legs up, catching their arms, and pulling them down. It's one of the more easily escapable ones.
Are you saying you could beat Okada then?
Yeah, you know what I am? I'm calling Okada out right now. If he's ready to go in 9 to 12 months.
Okada fears Katie. In at number two, talk to me about the bag from Raw.
Raw. Sorry, I forgot what I was talking about there. It's Raw. What was my note?
You were calling out Okada.
Yeah, I was calling out Okada. I think we were talking last week about this WWE thing of champs getting bet to earn title shots. And I've put it in Say Something Stupid this week because it happened twice on Raw this week. Like, which is insane. Or did it happen three times? No, it happened twice. So there was Damian Priest versus Sheamus, which is like a banger of a match. I actually really, really enjoyed it. And you know I love Damian Priest. But like, he bet Sheamus to get a shot at the US title. And I'm like, there's no clear number one contender for the US title. So why is there not a feud? Like, why is he not beating other guys to earn the shot at Sheamus? Why is he beating Sheamus to get the title shot? It doesn't make any sense. Like, and then in the main event, you had Nikki versus Charlotte. Nikki's the champion. Charlotte beats her. But we have to go back to the beginning of Raw for me to get angry about the end of Raw. Okay, so the beginning of Raw is a 25-minute segment between Charlotte, Rhea Ripley, and Nikki.
Oh.
And it's a promo. Oh. And when you have, right, the situation we had last week where Nikki has cashed in and won the title when the match was between Rhea and Charlotte, what is the logical conclusion to come from that scenario?
A Charlotte-Nikki match or a triple threat.
A triple threat.
Yeah.
They took 25 minutes to get to the point that SummerSlam was going to be a triple threat. And it was just like, all the promos were just bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't getting reactions. It was just like, cool, we know this is, there's Sonya Deville. Yep, she's going to make it a triple threat. Hurry this along, Sonya. Yeah. And it took so long to get to the point we all knew it was getting to. I was just so frustrated because, like, last week's Raw opened with John Cena. And people were hyped, you know what I mean? Like, I was fucking on cloud nine for the week. I was like, John Cena's back in wrestling, you know? Like, a pep in my step all week. And then, like, this is just like, and now this is how you don't open Raw with a crowd anymore because this is sucking the life and soul out of the crowd. Like, it's too long. It's too much. So, anyway... That sets up the triple threat for SummerSlam, but then Charlotte also challenges Nikki for a match later on that night. Fair enough, whatever. I'm like, maybe Nikki needs a good strong match to establish herself as a threat. You know, someone who could credibly come out with this triple threat as champion. And they had a main event match, and it wasn't great. Like, didn't really do a lot to establish Nikki in my view.
Yeah.
And then Nikki seems to be using like a top rope crossbody as a finisher, which I actually love, to be honest, because I think it is a very cool like superhero like move.
Yeah.
Last week it took Charlotte out and she won the title. This week Charlotte took it, rolled over and reversed it into a pin straight away. It is too early in the feud for them to be jobbing out Nikki's finish like that, and it just bothered me to no end because the show didn't even end there. they got the mic and they started talking again. Like, so Raw opened and closed on a Charlotte Flair promo where she was coming off as the Big Shot champion when in fact Nikki is the champion, and like none of it made sense. And the whole thing was like Charlotte, like Nikki's like, I want a rematch, I want a rematch. You're the champion, Nikki. You shouldn't be begging the challenger for a rematch. It just looks pathetic. And then Charlotte's like, yeah, cool, goes to give her the hand to shake. Nikki shakes her hand and then gets the shit kicked out of her. I'm like, I know you're playing like a naive, happy-go-lucky sort of like, everything's great superhero, but like, come on. They just did nothing for her in that episode of Raw. You know what I mean? Like, they did nothing to make me believe that she should be the champion, or like, you know, she's the underestimated underdog of the women's division. It just made me think, like, are they losing faith in Nikki already, like 7 days later?
Yeah.
And it was not a good feeling, because I have liked Nikki's character and I've loved where it's going. I didn't like anything about this storyline on Raw this week at all.
Yeah,
it was bad.
It was really awkward and clunky as well, and it's just like, if the fans were ever gonna have a shot, like, because last week, again, it's not that Nikki has been usually over, but she got pops because she won the Money in the Bank. Mm-hmm. Cool. She also got pops because she cast David Kill. And there's an opportunity there, because like, people tend to respond well to people, even if they're responding to the cash-in, they'll be like, you gave us this cool moment, so I'll go with it. And you have this little window where you can turn people who maybe are still establishing themselves. You can make that into genuine kind of like. And again, yeah, it made Nikki look really stupid and childish, do you know what I mean? Which is the fear that you have with this storyline, you know what I mean? Because she's just saying like stupid things, and it's like, oh, I can't beat you, but I'm almost a superhero and I almost beat you. And like, the words he's saying are just making her sound shit, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're just like...
Like, should you not be the superhero now that you're champion?
Yeah.
Like, the almost gimmick works up until the point you win the title and get to the top of the mountain. Like,
or at least be able to say that you could beat Charlotte. Do you know what I mean? At least say that, like, where you're like, don't say I can almost beat Charlotte. Well, if you can only almost beat her, you shouldn't be the champion.
Yeah.
She's got a legitimate, she just beat you as well, like, so you've just seen that, like.
I feel like when you look at like a lot of the underdogs, you know, that like have gotten, you know, mad pops over the last while, like Kofi Kingston and Daniel Bryan and all that, it's like the whole character is they're underdogs but they're class and they can win, you know what I mean? They're excellent wrestlers and all that. Whereas like, the message I'm getting from watching that is that like, she can't win, so therefore she's not an excellent wrestler, so what should I root for? you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I feel like the crowd want to root for her, but they're not giving us that reason to latch on. Like, yeah, that's exactly what you're saying with Daniel Bryan and Kofi Kingston. It's like, they just need the opportunity.
Yeah.
And then they're there. But it's like, now Nikki has the opportunity and you aren't giving her anything to back it up. Like, you literally have her begging for a rematch of her challenger. Like, it's just, I really hope they fix it next week. I think the triple threat SummerSlam can be really good. Like, because, you know, Rhea and Charlotte have really good matches, and I do think Nikki is excellent. So I have high hopes for the actual match.
Yeah.
But, like, just give me a reason to root for Nikki before we get there.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's tough. But in at number one, something that I was really hoping we get a chance to discuss, let's talk about the big news coming out this week in GCW.
Right, so this is actually basically a This Is Awesome. I'm glad it's number one because it segs into it nicely.
Right.
The reason I didn't bother putting it in GCW twice because I wasn't there to talk about it twice, but it was actually mostly really, really good. Like, this is... So I went and I watched GCW for the first time in a long time. In fact, this is probably the first independent wrestling show I've watched in forever. I'm trying to think, like, have I watched any indie wrestling since OTT's last Tala show, which is like February 2020? I don't think so. And even at that stage, I wasn't really watching Progress or ICW or the American Indies. I hadn't seen in a while. So it may be almost 2 years since I've actually sat down and proper like watched an indie.
Yeah.
GCW, anyway, they had a two-night event called Homecoming. And overall, I really, really liked it. I thought there was a lot of variety on the show. It's a very deathmatch heavy promotion, but that's like kind of up my street, you know. I'm really into that sort of stuff. It is, what I will say is, it's the edgiest company in the world.
Okay.
Right, like, so that has its advantages and disadvantages. The disadvantages would be like, on night two, for reasons obviously, like, well, I mean, for reasons we'll get to like in a minute,
okay,
they're all chanting fuck Dave Meltzer like in like every match, you know what I mean? And it's like, the first time is funny, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not like a Dave Meltzer person, so I'm like, ah, yeah, haha, right, fuck Dave Meltzer. But then,
yeah,
like, you keep doing it, and at this stage you're kind of like, you're taking away from the wrestlers then, you know what I mean? You're taking away from the matches, it's your own show.
Yeah.
So that's the downside of having like a mad edgy promotion like that. But the upside is that the atmosphere was fucking banging though when I was watching it. It kind of made me a bit sad because it made me kind of miss what we had over here, you know what I mean? Because
yeah.
I was like, it almost feels like everywhere else is having this like mad wrestling revolution. Like every show, you know, okay, Raw may have done that, but almost every show now, you know, AEW and SmackDown, and obviously we'll get to all that later. And now you've got like the indies like GCW and all that. AAW, I watched for the first time in ages as well, in Chicago. Like all these promotions are putting on these banging shows, and they've got these electric crowds. I'm like, fuck yeah, it makes me want it. It makes me miss it so badly. But yeah, the show was good. Night one was pretty good. Night two, there was two things I found really interesting from it. The first was Penelope Ford versus Ali Catch, right? I don't know if you saw this though. Alright, great. So Penelope Ford was caught in a Walls of Jericho, right? Ali had her in a Walls of Jericho. And you know the way like you lean back? The more you lean back, the more likely the person is to tap, right? So Ali leans back and leans back and leans back, and Penelope's still not tapping. So she leans all the way back, so she's lying on the floor with Penelope's legs still in her arms and Penelope's head where it would have been like at the start of the submission.
Jesus.
So her body is in a full circle, right? And everybody's like, oh, oh shit, what the fuck? And Penelope just rolls straight on through and goes for a pin attempt. She's so flexible, and we don't know this from AEW, but fun fact, she's immune to the Walls of Jericho. She's just so flexible, she can just roll through it. It's correct. And what's crazy about it is, if you've ever taken like a Walls of Jericho with like a backyard wrestling, you know,
what
I mean,
with
your mates, like, it's
yeah.
sore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is legit sore. Like, somebody in MMA tapped out to the Walls of Jericho once before, you know what I mean? It's almost impossible to like put somebody in that move in a legit fight, but if
yeah.
you do catch them in it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it's fucking sore. So she was able to roll on through as if like, don't care. And that was a really cool
I love that. That's amazing, because like you think about like that's a thing like where people are flexible
yeah.
and there are things that should hurt them that don't work. We never see it in wrestling. Why do more people not do that? That's awesome.
I
love that.
Really cool.
I love the great idea.
I also love Taylor, just speaking of AEW, one thing I love about AEW being able to like their wrestlers being able to do indie shows is the fact that you can see wrestlers in a completely different light than what you normally see in AEW.
Mm.
And in this case, it was Cesar Bononi. You know Cesar
mm-hmm.
Bononi?
Yeah.
He's in the Wingmen in AEW. So it would be weird for AEW to make him like a serious, you know, main character, a main man. You know what I mean? It wouldn't. There's they have too many wrestlers ahead of him. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And the Wingmen are excellent as well. You wouldn't really want to fuck with that. It's funny. It's entertaining. I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is cool the fact that somebody who's in that position on the card in AEW can go to a GCW with a dead serious video package, a dead serious interview, and he can say, look, I'm going to show you what I'm made of. And you see him in a completely different light. I always find that really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So he went in and he wrestled Chris Dickinson. But it was just really, it was just interesting to see him in that light. And I was just thinking how cool it would be if like everyone could do that. You know what I mean? Like imagine, I said Cedric Alexander earlier. You know what I mean? I think Cedric Alexander is so valuable, you know what I mean? I WWE mustn't see it the same way, but I think as a heel, he is so charismatic, and in the ring, he's fucking excellent. Someone like that could go to any indie promotion right now and set the whole fucking building on fire, you know what I mean? Like, so I'd love if, you know, imagine like if he could go to like GCW or one of those promotions and make a name for himself there. I think it's a really, really cool thing. But yeah, night one, there was death matches, there was some prospects, a mix of wrestlers. It was actually like an unboxing for me, because again, I had no intentions of watching this until I saw something in the main event about my group
yeah.
from my group chat. So this is basically an unboxing, because I'm like, oh, who's coming out next? Oh, I remember them. We're like, oh, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Drew Parker was there. I don't know if you know Drew Parker.
Oh, yeah, he was in Japan for a long time.
He is now the BJW? BJPW? I don't know my Japanese promotions, I'll be honest, but it's like a deathmatch, big Japanese deathmatch company. He's a champion now, he's the number one man over there. So he came over and he fought and he won the GCW Ultra Violent title, which is their kind of like second tier. Again, I love it. I just love all like the broken glass and the fucking light shoes. Like, I don't know, I just find it really, really fun. Like, I love telling my mom about it as well. I love being like, mom, I was watching a wrestling match there, and you know, like panes of glass. Yeah, it's like, and she's like, oh god, oh. I fucking love it. But the main event is the reason I watched GCW,
yes.
and it was Nick Gage, beloved Nick Gage, GCW's god. You know what I mean? Coming out and defending his GCW world title against Matt Cardona, formerly known as Zack Ryder. That is ECW original Zack Ryder, hardcore icon Zack Ryder. They had a match. And one thing I actually love about this as well, I couldn't stop laughing. I know some people will complain about health and safety shit, we'll get to that in a sec, but like, I actually love GCW's entrance way. The way it works is like, there's no barriers or nothing like that. You just have to sort of hope that none of the fans stab anybody or do anything stupid. So Zack Ryder came out with like bodyguards and the fans are, you know, in his face, like, fuck you, fuck you. But when Nick Gage is dying one of his entrances, but it's so cool, like he comes out and the whole crowd are like moshing basically like all on top of him, like MDK, MDK. You can't even see him because his fans all swarming him and all that. Yeah. It's just fucking great though. He comes in and he's so energized by it, he's like, yeah. And he comes in, I fucking love Nick Gage, man. I can't believe he's on AEW next week, but or tonight it is actually.
Yeah.
But he's defending his title and it's a full on death match. And that's what's really cool about this. Zack Ryder doesn't hold back. We get to see him in, again, in a different light, you know what I mean? Like, covered in blood, like, getting fucking battered. It's like, holy shit, he's actually doing it. There was a lot of interference in this match up towards the end, and one thing that made me laugh so much is obviously because he has a match with Chris Jericho tonight in AEW, at one point in the match, you just hear, I'll be calm. And you just see, there's not a pop, but like a pop, but you just see all the fans going, no, and you see them back, like, no way, and they all stand up, like they go to the entrance, like, no fucking way. And yeah, they're right to say no fucking way because he wasn't there. So his music played to distract Nick Gage. Nick Gage got double crossed, distracted by the bad guys. And in the end, Zack Ryder covers. And you still think Nick Gage is going to kick out. Like, when I saw this match on paper, I was like, obviously Nick Gage is going to win, but it'll be a cool spectacle before he goes off and feuds with Moxley or whoever. And Zack Ryder goes for the cover. 1, 2, 3. And a sound of both shock and disgust in the GCW fan. Oh, it is just beautiful. I absolutely love this so much, right? And now we get into the controversy of it all, right?
Okay.
So a couple of people threw shit in the ring, and that turned into a lot of people throwing shit in the ring. I am very much in the pro throwing shit in the ring camp. Under two conditions, right? It's the same as pitch invasions. I love pitch invasions, man. They should be 100% legal. Like, not streakers, but like, post-match, you know, you've just won a trophy, like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's weird, I wasn't even thinking that you thought streakers were illegal. Now I'm like, it's weird that you clarified.
But like, you know, like, yeah, like, when they win All-Ireland now, they don't have, like, pitch invasions where, like, everyone celebrates with their county. Like,
well, COVID.
Oh, yeah, now I support it. But, like, only in the COVID world, you know, like, pre-COVID, I was like, they should keep, I know there's risks, I understand the health and safety aspect of it, but I don't care, it's deadly. So here's my stance on throwing shit in the ring. I'm in the same kind of camp under two conditions, right? The first one, the moment has to be right, and this is the perfect example of a right moment. Show ends with a shock heel victory, a title change that nobody expected. This is exactly the sort of moment. The moments are rare. Heel turns that end the show, or shocking heel victories that end the show. That's kind of it, off the top of my head, that's all I can really think of, where you throw shit at the ring. It should be rare, but it should happen in a moment like that to symbolise how fucking, oh, yeah, how disgusting the fans are, you know what I mean? That's term number one. Term number two is, what, throw like light shit, you know what I mean? Like light, like, you know, an empty cup or whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, like a tissue or.
You know what I mean? Shite like that. Not full bottles and not fucking pizza cutter. I saw a picture on Twitter like around that night, and someone threw a pizza cutter at Zack Ryder, and he just took the picture, just seen a pizza cutter flying through the air. It's like, why'd you even bring that? Like, what? Like, what was going through your head? And like, you know what? I'm very unhappy with the result of this fictional match. I think I should throw this weapon at one of the actors' heads. I think that was the appropriate reaction.
Why was he carrying a pizza cutter? Is that just to give to Nick Gage as a case? Like, or
maybe? I don't know. Like, I don't
you just bring it places. You never know when you're going to have good pizza. That's what I always say.
Yeah, but like, again, it's like, this is what it's. This is the problem when you're the edgiest company in the world, you attract that sort of fan where it's like a banging atmosphere, but certain things
also carrying weapons.
Yeah, certain things ruin it. So this caused, you know, a lot of debate. Some people, Dave Meltzer, acted as if like fans throwing shit in the ring was like the worst thing to ever happen to the wrestling industry ever. Which like
it never happened in the 70s.
Well, no, it did, but that's why he hates it. You know what I mean? Like he said, he used like previous examples, and he's like, this is why it's shit and all that. And like, I disagreed with him, but like as somebody rightly pointed out, it's like he didn't make this much of a fuss over like speaking out and like, you know what I mean, the serious shit.
Yeah.
But the second like fans are throwing shit in the ring, it's like, no, this.
I still don't think he said that David Starr hasn't read. Do you know what I mean?
I don't follow him, so I don't know why. I'm just going based on what other people are saying.
This is his, yeah.
Yeah, like this was his breaking point. You know what I mean?
It's so like, weird. He's so weird.
And that, by the way, that's why you got fuck Dave Meltzer chance in night two, because this is night one. And then the fact he took it out on the, he didn't like the GCW fans don't like him. I saw some people saying like, do you think they're gonna do like an angle with Dave Meltzer now? And I'm like, I love it. They did that! Dave Meltzer, Deathmatch Dave! Oh, that's all I want to see. But also, Dave Meltzer's fucking jacked. I don't care if he's like 90. He could do one of those things, you know what I mean? But it'd be really funny. But like, looking back, yeah, what I was saying, there's a lot happening here. He basically, Dave Meltzer had what he had to say. I thought like, yeah, I think the weapon choice is what ruins it, what almost kind of validates his sort of kind of, oh, this shouldn't be happening. Like, fans need to be more responsible if you want to do something like that, you know what I mean? Like, again, this show for me is like 90% dead, 99% deadly. I loved it, you know what I mean? This got like, I plan on watching the next GCW show now and everything, like,
nice.
But yeah, just calm it with the weapons.
It's better than the show at WrestleMania where two wrestlers got sick in the ring then, is it?
Oh, yes! Well, I think that's kind of part of the fun, you know what I mean? I feel like
it's so edgy.
It's such an edgelord kind of promotion that it's like, you take the good with the bad and the bad, and it becomes part of the show.
Okay, fair enough. Interesting. No, I was down there. And I hadn't heard much about it. I didn't hear about the pizza cutter at Mr. Dave Meltzer thing.
Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention the other really funny part, right? Dave Meltzer also claimed that there was plants that at the plants that threw the stuff in the ring at the start to get that sort of going, and that caused a big debate over like whether or not there was plants, and like all people were taking the piss out of it and all saying like Joey Janela put a thing on Twitter being like, are you interested in being a plant at a GCW show? Email, you know, whatever. And it was like, it was really funny, like the idea of being like, oh, you go out there and throw cans. I don't know whether it's true or not. I mean, it could have been.
Even if it is true, what's the big deal?
Yeah, it's wrestling.
I mean, like, I've often sent people out like to be like, go sit in the crowd. You know what I mean?
I don't mean to alarm you, but like, Zack Ryder and Nick Gage didn't want to kill each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're gonna be angry, wait a minute, that part of that was fake. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
That's where you're drawing the line of fake wrestling. Somebody started a chat or a movie.
That's someone, they know someone. That's not a real sign they ripped up. How dare they?
GCW put out a GCW plant t-shirt as well. So it's like, if you ever want to go to the next GCW show as a plant, you can wear that t-shirt that says you're a GCW plant, which I thought was pretty cool as well. So overall, I liked it. Yeah. I liked it quite a bit. I'll probably keep up to date with GCW now and see what's happening.
Very interesting. Keep us posted about we need to know in the meantime. Guys, I don't think that was the worst of the week, but very interesting to discuss. We were talking about all right, so let's talk about the good from the week, because it's time for best moments of the week when you're recording Fight Factory, okay? Just to bring it behind a little bit. Like, the This Is Awesome part, there's no need for that to play because it'd take a lot of work and it'd only be the three of us here that can hear it. So we just have to sit in silence for a little while, which Corporate Keen isn't used to after a year of us doing it live on Zoom. And it's still an adjustment period, so apologies if
you
laugh.
I still don't know if you can hear me during that or not. Can you, like, if you're, you know, when you're playing This Is Awesome, and if I was to say something when that was playing, but it's silent for us, can they hear me say that?
No, I'll cut you out, because sometimes we'll just start chatting.
Oh, but then, that'd be hard for editing, though, you don't want to.
Because sometimes we're just chatting, like, so,
right.
And that's why it's really annoying.
So that's why it sounds for the editing, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Only took me, like, 4 years.
Legit, it's around that. In at number 5, talking about the good from MLW.
Oh yeah, man, right, so MLW, it was Battle Royale, it's their Royal Rumble, it's an interesting setup. Basically, it's a 40-man Royal Rumble, but you can eliminate people by pin, submission, or throwing over top rope. So it's proper, like, it's proper survival of the fittest. Ironically enough, nobody was eliminated for like 20 entrants as well, so like the ring was fucking full at one point. I'm not even here to talk about the match itself, but just, well, what is in my head, I'm trying to think what happened. It was in Philadelphia, and Blue Meanie was a surprise pop, and he got a mad pop.
Nice.
Savio Vega was probably the biggest star of the night, most popular star of the night, which is very random but cool. or is it random? Maybe he has a history there with ECW and stuff. I don't know. Like, that's not my era. But what else? They signed Casey Navarro, who's pretty talented, and Zicky Dice, who's pretty charismatic. He was in the first sort of reboot of NWA. Anything else happen in the Battle Royale that's worth really mentioning? They had some good moments with who the fuck was it? Was it? Okay, well, I forget the person's name, but they did their own set of Kofi spots where he got thrown directly from like onto the commentary table, which I thought was really funny. And then he got like my favorite one. He got punched like over the top, but like he was already over the top rope, but he's on the apron and somebody punched him, and he just, as he fell, he like flipped onto his head, kind of. So like his back was on the ground and his feet were like up on top of like the fan barrier. So it's actually really cool. There was a couple like, I love those sort of spots. I just think it's cool. But that's, yeah, not too much to say about the Battle Royale, to be honest. My fucking favourite moment came from the opening segment. The show was opened with Dario Cueto, who now has a new name that I forget. but unlike whenever a wrestler gets a new name, you know what I mean? Like, No Way Jose becoming No Way.
Yeah.
There's actually like a valid reason for Dario Cueto to have a new name. You know what I mean? He hosted like an underground fight club where people were murdered. You know what I mean? Like, he's on the run. Him having a new legal name actually makes perfect sense.
He's Caesar Duran.
Ah, there you go. There you go. I love it. He came out. I just love this man so much, man. He's still the same charm. He's got the same everything. He comes out. He's interrupted by Injustice, who are a really talented tag team, Jordan Oliver and Myron Reed, and they're challenging for a title shot. He says, you know, you better not, like, you don't interrupt me for, like, no reason. And Myron Reed grabs the microphone and says, you know, we want a title shot. And Dario Cueto grabs the package and goes, who the fuck are you? He still has the same, like, every time he says anything, I just love, like, it just makes me laugh so much. But Jordan Oliver and Myron Reed were interrupted by the sound of a theme song that I haven't heard in a long time. And it was a theme song of LAX. And out comes Conan. And it's not Homicide Hernandez. It's not Santana and Ortiz. It is a new set of wrestlers. One of them is a veteran who's been around a while. I don't know, because he's a manager, I think. I looked him up like just there before I showed up here. I didn't get to look properly into his career. But he's a veteran anyway. The other two are promising wrestlers, Slice Boogie from NWA and Danny Rivera, who's also Danny Limelight. He was in like AEW Dark and a couple of other places. So again, two promising wrestlers. And I did see people saying, like, you know, oh, they just brought in like complete randomers and went, that's LAX or whatever. But it's like, they did that last time with Santana and Ortiz. You know, they brought in two sort of young, again, not complete randomers, but they were chosen carefully, you know what I mean? And they delivered. They're, like, look at Santana and Ortiz now.
It worked out, like.
They absolutely held up their end of the bargain to have Conan as their mouthpiece while they did the in-ring stuff. And now, look, they're charismatic. They're doing bits in NWA with the Inner Circle and all that. So this, for me, this is fucking excellent, because these, I've seen little bits and pieces of these wrestlers. They're good, but I don't know a huge amount about them, you know, kind of way. They're promising, whatever. But this is how you, this is what they need, you know what I mean? Give them LAX, give them Conan as their mouthpiece. Now immediately they have something. This is why I love factions, you know what I mean? Now I'm fully rooting for them, and they've only just been here like 5 seconds. And if they can hold up their end of the bargain, they can deliver in the ring, and they've got Conan on the mic, and you know what I mean? They're putting on these banging matches and stuff. There they go up to the next level, you know what I mean? I'm really, Conan as a manager, you know, in LAX, I don't care what promotion it's in, I'm delighted, you know what I mean? And you can have Homicide Hernandez, Santana and Ortiz pop up, but I mean, like, even if those are the wrestlers you wanted, it's like, they don't need, you know, they don't need MLW. Like, Santana Ortiz are an AEW. Homicide, he's a Ring of Honor tag champion right now, and Hernandez is an Impact, you know what I mean? So none of these people need MLW or need to go back. And, you know, as long as the wrestlers hold up their end of the bargain, like, this would be great. This is LAX again, you know what I mean? Nice. In MLW, I'm 100% up for it. I can't wait to see what they do next. And, yeah, good stuff.
Nice. Okay, interesting stuff. In the number four, talk to me about the good from Raw.
So one of the points I put in about Raw was actually because I seen your point about Okada, and I just wanted to be contentious. Yeah. But now I actually agree with what you said about Okada. It didn't go the way I was anticipating. I thought you were going to go down the route of like Okada just having too many finishers, full stop, of finishing matches with things that aren't finishers.
Oh, I see now how you were actually coming for me.
Because AJ Styles and Omos defeated the Viking Raiders this week with a 450 splash, which is not one of AJ's finishers, and I absolutely love that. I love when this happens in wrestling matches. I like I think it should happen every once in a while with signature moves, just so we, like, we understand why they're signature moves, why they keep going back to that well of using that move. So, like, I really loved it, and I thought we were going to have a bigger argument on our hands by me including this point. So that's kind of all I have to say on that.
No, I actually agree.
I do have another point about Raw though, so it's okay. I wasn't just hinging everything. My other thing that I liked about Raw is I think they finally found a spot that works for Reginald.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, this is daily.
Yes.
So a big complaint about Reginald lately has been he shouldn't be the focus of the women's division, and it wasn't working. Whatever. I didn't hate him in the women's division, like, but I can understand the complaints. But now he's the 24/7 champion, and it is the perfect role for someone like him. They actually like had a full on like ring the bell match with Orchard and Reginald, where he just got to do a lot of mad athletic shit. Like, it was only like 3 minutes long, but it's playing to both their strengths. Like Orchard's facials all the way through this exchange just made me crack, you know what I mean? Like, just this like bewildered child, like, he did a flip, you know what I mean? Like, that's what like an 8 year old watching wrestling is like. And of course he's got the microphone, he's commentating all the way through it, and it was just a really fun little showcase of what makes both of those characters special. And like, I know people complain about the likes of Akira Tozawa and stuff being wasted in this gimmick, but to me there's still nothing funnier than those lads chasing the 24/7 title. It's like a cartoon, like, and I love, because it doesn't make sense when Akira Tozawa starts running and then like beckons the rest of them to follow him. I'm like, why are you doing that, pal? Like, why are you leading the gang? You should be trying to misdirect them so you can run it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, but I love the cartoon visual of let's get him, you know what I mean? But it doesn't make any sense. Like, you should be like,
He's over there.
Yeah, like, you should all be trying to outrun each other, not like attack him gang style. But then of course Reginald hops the top rope and like just unnecessarily backflips all the way up the ramp, and I'm just like, it's so unnecessary. Oh, and I love it.
How cool was his entrance, by the way, when he runs down and like the camera's pointing up at the ceiling and he just doing the flip, I'm like, oh, that's them. I was in the same boat. I didn't enjoy him at all in the women's division. I thought it kind of sucked the fun out of it for me a bit. But like, this is so perfect for him. Like, it was actually gas. You know, I was watching earlier today, gymnastics. It was on, the Olympics was on.
Yes.
I was giving it a look. And you know, what was in my head the entire time I was watching it?
What?
First of all, holy shit, this is deadly. I should watch this more. Secondly, these people would all be banging wrestlers. Like, I imagine these people doing any of this shit. If any of these people did one of these things in a wrestling ring, it'd be the most talked about thing, you know what I mean? Like, for the whole week.
Imagine also wrestling fans watching the gymnastics, do you know what I mean? Do you know when they do their vault off and then they land on their feet like an indie like standoff and they're like, huh! And then the wrestler's like, yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, so I just really enjoyed that little role, and I hope they kind of keep going that way, Reginald. I think there's a lot of fun to be had with him backstage, because he does have a unique talent.
Yeah.
And this is a fun way of showcasing it. So yeah, I hope he gets, I don't want to say a long reign with the 24/7 title, but I hope he's involved in that scene for a long time.
He's also got like a weird charisma that makes no sense in anything kind of serious. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He also is charismatic. You can't deny it, the way he talks and kind of moves and just everything about him. So yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a good spot for him. In the number three, I want to talk about AEW. And in the New Japan and GCW heavy week, let's talk about an AEW Dynamite that relied a lot on both. This week's was probably for me the weakest of the few Dynamites they've had since Crowd came back so far, but they still had some surprises and big highlights along the way. For example, we mentioned it earlier, after Jericho unsurprisingly completed his first labor en route to facing MJF when he defeated Sean Spears in a match where chairs were legal for Spears, MJF announced that his next opponent would be none other than GCW legend, who spoke about him already, Nick Gage, in a death match tonight on Dynamite. Amazing stuff. A really fun, off the wall, and because of Dark Side of the Ring, now relevant get for AEW, and it was totally surreal because they then had him come out and just seeing him on Dynamite was like, no, like, I may as well be watching Corbin Keen on Dynamite and be like, alright. It's just like, what is happening?
This is why I fucking love AEW, because you can get people like Eddie Kingston, Chuck Taylor, Nick Gage, you know what I mean? Like, when would you ever see anyone like that, like, on a national scale like that, you know what I mean? I didn't think AEW would do it, to be honest. So I remember, remember there was what was the last pick for you?
Where
they had the Casino Battle Royal.
Yeah.
And there was like people saying like, oh, Nick Gage for a wild card. And when it didn't happen, I was kind of like, yeah, man, he's probably never going to be in AEW. That's a bit far-fetched. And when it happened, I was like, oh, shit. Let's go.
Amazing. Then Jericho announced later that for the match, he'd revert back to his more intense painmaker gimmick that he used in New Japan when he was wrestling Naito and Evil in hardcore scenarios. We had another surprise when none other than Chavo freaking Guerrero, an absolute Loblos legend, showed up as the new advisor to Andrade. Although the segment itself wasn't really fantastic, there was another really cool bit where we had Sting squaring off and parroting Orange Cassidy, which was really fun.
Just the little hands.
Just to see Sting doing stuff like that, I'm like, oh my god, what is going on? He is having a ball here. So really, really fun stuff. But it's the main event that I want to discuss, as it was like John Moxley defending his New Japan US Championship against the man that he won it off 18 months ago in Lance Archer. So there's a history there together, and these two work really well together. They also gave this match the main event, which is another positive step in the Lance Archer reclamation project that I've discussed in recent weeks. My issue with the match as I watched it, and this is live, okay, considering that I am putting it in, this is awesome, as I watched it live, was that I just felt that it was all going one way, and so mentally I was preparing myself to be on here having the same rant I've had before, where it's like, AEW don't know how to deal with monsters, great, you put them in the main event but you still had them lose and it's a waste of time, because him winning this match seems so unlikely, given that, remember, he left New Japan to come to AEW and he hasn't really looked like going back. And it was strange that he left, like, because he'd had a good time in New Japan, but he just kind of, that was it, he was done, and he's never even like talked or seemed interested in coming back, despite the amazing year that perhaps made him eligible to join AEW and be on their radar. This match felt a little off as it went on, in a way that made sense in the end, in hindsight. For example, Moxley did the heat in this match, which, again, like, when you look at the dynamic, Moxley's a super face who's over, there's a live crowd there. Archer's only really been a heel in AEW. And Moxley, again, was much more dominant than you'd expect if you were laying this match out on paper. But then, just as he seemed to have everything in hand, Archer would turn it around, and there was one really sick spot where Moxley got out two chairs, and he was going to put Archer through them, and he just goes, no. And he just got the chairs and turned them around back to back, and he's like, that's the way I want to do it. Archer grabs him, chokeslam onto the two chairs. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that wins that Katie just did. Yeah. That happened. It was sick. The ending was a callback to the Wrestle Kingdom match that Moxley won the belt in, where there was two tables set up outside. The way that finished was Moxley did a paradigm shift off the apron through the table. And I remember talking about it on the show. It's one of these New Japan bogey tables. So it's like, oh, it was a sick spot. So, but this time, like, to raise the stakes, Moxley, he set up the tables outside and he's like, no, do you know what? And then he goes under the ring, he gets barbed wire out on top of him. Lance Archer is beaten up, he goes to grab him in the paradigm shift. Lance Archer counters, chokes him, boom, 1, 2, 3. Lance Archer is your new champion. And I want you to look at how surprising that all this was, because not only is Moxley losing in general and cleanly so rare in AEW, I can't think of one time that it happened. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Is there a scene where Moxie got pinned cleanly? Can anyone think of a match here off the top of your heads? Like, you've got Omega, he lost the belt in, but that wasn't clean. Omega had to sprint out of the arena after that. Like, it doesn't happen. Like, but it was a monster winning a big match too, which, again, just doesn't happen in AEW. Not only that, but we, like I said, we had zero inclination Archer was in any way interested in returning to or being associated with New Japan, and now he's one of their champions. We had every reason to believe Moxley was being kept as champion for the long haul, and eventually was going to lose it on another New Japan show. I remember doing a preview of Wrestle Kingdom with Ben Given, and we were like, New Japan's approach with Moxley, and this is mid-COVID, is just to say, we still have John Moxley, don't worry. So they're keeping the belt on him. To the point that you may remember me talking about Kenta having the briefcase for nearly a year and then eventually like showing up on Dynamite to face Moxley for the title shot that he never got. And Moxley ended up winning that title shot. So it's like, if you didn't give it to Kenta, when are you going to give it? Totally out of the blue, but brilliant. I love it. It's exactly what a guy like Lance Archer needs. Archer is so good, but also he's in his mid-40s. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't have the rest of his... He doesn't have like 10, 20 years left to go. But he's so talented that you want to give him success now. And it just looked like it had passed him by. So to see him win in the main event of Dynamite, being title relevant again, being the first person any of us can think of in AEW to beat John Moxley clean... absolutely amazing stuff. And a good guy as well. Like, really, I remember when we nominated him for a Blowy before, he wanted that fucking award. He campaigned for it and he won it. So friend of the show as well. Well done, Lance Archer. Congratulations. Absolutely delighted for him. In at number two, talk to me about the good from SmackDown.
SmackDown opened with John Cena challenging Roman Reigns, and it closed with Roman Reigns addressing that challenge. I loved it. Oh, I fucking loved it. He turns around and John Cena's not there. They didn't have a confrontation. It was just Reigns on his own with his council and his family. And he turns around and he just like tears Cena like to shreds. This is why I really wanted this like rematch. Remember last time, obviously, like Reigns beat Cena, but like it wasn't really passing the torch, because John Cena just annihilated him in the promos. I'm like, yeah, Reigns won, but it's like, as far as the fans are concerned, he's still miles away from him, like in terms of promos and stuff. Whereas this time, oh man, I can't wait to see them proper like scrap on them. Like, I'm really like, that is, SmackDown is now a must see for me. Yeah. I can't wait.
Reigns is such an alpha dog. Almost a lie. I don't know if you're gonna say.
He turns around and he starts ripping Cena and he's like, "You came out and it's just a nostalgia act. Same entrance, you know, same look, same promo, same insults. It's like missionary every single night." And he's just fucking tearing to shreds. And then, so that, first of all, that was really cool. But then he turns around and he's like, "So in terms of accepting your challenge, no." And it's like, okay, all right, we'll see you. Like, I assume that's going to be the end of that, and then we'll address it the following week. But then out of nowhere, fucking Finn Balor comes out already. Remember, all we were saying, like, I thought anyway it was going to be like after Reigns beat Cena, it'll be maybe Balor, you know, with the September, October pay-per-views. But like, he just comes out immediately and he's like, "If you can't accept Cena's challenge, well, maybe you'll accept mine." And he starts squaring up to him, and I was like, "Ooh, shit, alright." And then like Reigns just kind of like, there's like a pause there, and he just turns around and he's just like, "I accept." And I was like, "Oh, what the fuck, man." Like, I just turned it up out of nowhere. Like, I was like, where the fuck did that come from? Like, I'm loving SmackDown at the minute, man. I don't know what else. Who knows where, like, I can't wait to watch SmackDown. Like, it's just great.
How does the match work? That's the thing. You're like, is Cena going to wrestle Balor? And it probably will just work out something like that.
Cena versus Balor, man. Like,
yeah. That's amazing. Like, but like, yeah, as well, like, and this is what I love, because the criticism, like, again, and we kind of talk about this, like, the weekly TV shows, it's either SmackDown or Dynamite most weeks are the better show, and kind of that's what we're discussing most of the time. But like, the people that are determined to hate WWE, that like we spoke about a while back, like the criticism they always have at SmackDown is, it's so predictable, it's just the same thing every week. This was not the same thing. Not one person turned around and said, "It's going to be Balor versus Reigns at the end of this." Do you know what I mean? It was not at all. I know we discussed it. It's going to be in the future. But man, this is really, really good. And I was a fan. I can't wait. Any thoughts on what's going to happen? It's definitely going to be Reigns versus Cena at SummerSlam.
Oh, I think Balor beats Reigns, destroys them all. Can't wait.
Like, you know the way I'm a week behind is because of Virgin Media.
Spoilers.
No, I seen this entire promo because Eva knew I would love it so much. She recorded it off the telly and sent it to me in the messenger. But like that shows the impact of that promo where people were like, "Oh shit! Like you have to see this. You can't wait a week."
Oh, well, you see it all on Virgin Media. Like the highlights are going to be better. You know what I mean? Because you'll hear the start of the music and then Balor will just be in the ring and you'll be like, "Oh, I love it!"
Will they show that promo on Saturday morning telly? Yeah, or will that cause a lot of kids to ask their parents what missionary is?
They might cut that bit out, yeah.
I don't think they will, because I remember like they do... Well, yeah, anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, I mean, it's not swearing. I don't know what the rules are, but like, you know what I mean? Yeah, I just love
someone at Virgin Media has a decision on
that.
Report back to us next week and see if they kept it in or not. In at number one, let's talk about New Japan. If you weren't watching over the weekend, you may have at least seen that New Japan had a show on in Tokyo Dome. It was the rescheduled WrestleGlam Grand Slam event that had been cancelled in May. The show actually garnered worldwide headlines. I don't know if you noticed this, for having an albeit small crowd when even the Olympics in the same place can't. I don't know how New Japan, like what brown envelopes they're given. Like, Inoki is a powerful government figure, but Jesus Christ, like, he's literally flexing all over the Olympics right there. And to tell the truth, a lot of the show felt like it was being put on more at a contractual obligation, because there were, rather than there was a bunch of hot feuds that were all building towards a stadium show, because even the fact that it was just like reorganized and they'd given away a lot of the matches that were originally on the show just because they had so much of a schedule to backfill. There was a couple of title changes though. There was a couple of interesting things that happened. You had Robbie Eagles defeating El Desperado for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship in an upset to become the first ever Australian New Japan title holder, in a result that felt more random than anything else. I don't think it was necessarily built towards. I think El Desperado was a really good champion, but I don't know, they want to tick that Australian box, I suppose. You also had Dangerous Techers, Zack Sabre Jr. and Taichi win their heavyweight tag belts back off Naito and Sanada in another inexplicably long but a bit more fun match than they won, where LIJ won the belts. These two teams though, unsurprisingly, since they're essentially four singles wrestlers, tend to have better singles matches with each other than actual tag matches, and they've done that. So in the two shows, there was four shows in a row, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday over the weekend, which is like, I felt like it was a little burn they treat for me, like, but they had like singles matches on the preview shows, like two versus two, and then they swapped the following night. And like, for me, like the best moments from all of these matches was on the first night. It was Zack Sabre Jr. against Sanada. Okay, so Zack Sabre Jr. rolled him up at one stage in like one of his like European clutch pins. You know, he just rolled the guy from behind into a thing. Sanada like is behind him with his shoulders pinned. I don't know if you've seen the gif for this, but this is phenomenal. He grabs Zack Sabre Jr. in like, do you know the Tiger Suplex where he grabbed their arms, underhook the arms? He pins Zack Sabre Jr.'s shoulders to the mat. Zack Sabre Jr. countered in that second by putting his 2 feet on Sanada's chest, so both men's shoulders were on the mat at the same time, and then it's 1, 2, 3 double pin draw. It was phenomenal. Like, when you see it in slow motion, you're like, holy shit, and then you see it happen in real time, you're like, 14 different things needed to happen in a second there. It was amazing. It's the type of thing, I bet once this place opens up, like Fight Factory downstairs, you're going to have everyone trying that spot. It was incredible. And one of the best moments of the week. But the reason I'm putting this number one is because we got ourselves a genuine Tokyo Dome main event classic from a match that really had no right to be. The main event was slated to be Shingo Takagi defending his IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against Kota Ibushi. However, Ibushi had come down with an illness that left it a last minute decision and ultimately cost him his spot on the card. Stepping into a spot in the last minute was only the most experienced and successful Tokyo Dome performer of all time, Hiroshi Tanahashi, a man who, as noted on commentary beforehand, only Shinsuke Nakamura had defeated first time out in Tokyo Dome. So like, people defeated him like Okada, but it took them two or three goes. Jay White a few years ago was believed he was going to win, you might remember it, in a Tokyo Dome match, and then Tanahashi ended up winning. Even this year, Tanahashi beat the Great Okan, because it was the first time he faced him in the Tokyo Dome, which I never kind of realised, but that's a cool little note. And with it being a late replacement, you'd argue that it's predictable, since Tatagi is the only one meant to be in this match as of a few hours before it happened. But that's to forget that you could have said the same about the match that Takagi won the belt in against Okada. So could Tanahashi pull off one more Tokyo Dome title win? And even if not, could he at least make us believe so? The two wrestled an evenly split match until Tanahashi countered the Last of the Dragon with a sling blade. So, like, ultimately, Shingo goes to lift him up in a kind of a modified fireman's carry, but as he does so, immediately into a sling blade. And then went up to the top rope, hit a crossbody. As he hit a crossbody, he said, "No, tribute to Ibushi, I'm going to go one more time." Grabbed him, hit the Kamigoye on him, and then went to the top rope, high fly flow. 1, 2, you can hear the crowd coming up, and it's like, he's hit 4 finishers on him, holy shit! Kick out, huge pop. The Tokyo Dome may have been far from full due to COVID restrictions, but you wouldn't have known it as they answered the question, can they convince us, with that resoundingly loud near fall pop when Shingo kicked out. The two went back and forth like so many strong style battles. It was like, it was proper, like, you felt like you were watching a highlight package of great Tokyo Dome matches from before. Even the camera work was amazing, because they're just elbowing the shit out of each other in the middle of the ring. Proper strong style battle style. And then in the middle of it, Shingo, they're both kind of woozing up. Shingo, like, goes, right, I'm fucking ending this. Goes to lean back, and the timing of it was just perfect, because as he leaned back, so does Tanahashi, and just cracks him with a full force Shibata headbutt. It was so hard hitting. The selling was just like, I believe they're just this way. Like, they're just on their last feet. So then Tana is like, right, I have an opening here. Goes back up to the top rope, but he's so shook from headbutting himself that Shingo gets to catch up with him. They have a bit of a strong style battle on the top rope. Shingo eventually grabs him, gets him on his shoulders, hits Last of the Dragon from the top rope. That somehow only got a 2, another huge pop for a near fall. But Shingo's like, right, no, enough of this. Grabs him straight away, hit another one, Last of the Dragon again, and Shingo Takagi retained his belt. And I want you to look at this title reign with all of this in mind. Absolutely none of it was supposed to happen. This has all come from a match that was supposed to be Will Ospreay versus Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. Ospreay lost the belt, Shingo was thrown in at the last minute against Okada, and they're like, fuck it. He went out, had a classic against Okada. Now he's gone out and had a classic in Tokyo Dome that wasn't meant to happen, because the last minute they're like, fuck it, Tanahashi. Now he's beaten he's beaten John Cena and Roman Reigns in consecutive matches. This is like a Finn Balor going out and doing those two things. It's like someone the fans all really like, and they're like, he's the best wrestler, but like, he'll never get his respect because they want your Cena or Reigns. They want your Okada or Tanahashi. They're the golden boys who are always going to win. And this guy's going out and having classic matches, but also beating them convincingly. It's becoming like, it's becoming a banner year, and every single person who touted Shingo's abilities for all those years, again, we thought this guy was going to be an Ishii, where everyone loves him, everyone thinks he's one of the best wrestlers, but he never gets his due. Now he's getting everything, and it's phenomenal to see. No matter what is being asked of him, he's stepping up, and as a world champion, he's someone that has a genuine claim to being the best wrestler on the planet today. 2 matches in, his title reign is already something very, very special, and something that we can all be positive about New Japan about, in a time where we haven't had much to be positive about. So, easily number 1 for me, and I think anyone who saw it would agree also. Guys, that's all the time we have for this week, at least in the flagship show. We will be back on Friday with Ask the Low Blows in the meantime. But if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Corporate Keen on YouTube and also Patreon now. Corporate Keen's blowing up on the internet. Like, we did. Like, I feel like we missed a trick not advertising him for this show. Like,
yeah, he's blown up on the internet, but he's spending time stalking my cage match on the internet.
Katie Harvey, you've been writing about yourself on your cage match. You want to give that a plug?
Why are you on my cage match? I never asked you.
It's funny. I was in the middle of leaving a 1-star review and I was like, oh, wait a minute, what's this?
There was a 1-star. Katie, you had to plug it in particular now? She's got a baby coming up in a few months. There you go, that's plugged that. Anyway, guys, we'll be back for Ask Low Blows later in the week. Back next week, discussing the rest of the week that was. But in the meantime, for Corporate Keen, for Katie Harvey, I've been Rick Nash. That's the bottom line. It's Low Blows said so.